So we're still on the first team, and there were some very interesting points that were brought up, and we'd like to expand on those. Can I say that we're being visited by somebody? Or? Okay. Apparently we have a surprise visit, and after that we move on to the second team. Okay, so just to warm up a bit, we were talking about local extreme conditions, following the introduction by the ambassador, the director general was talking about local extreme conditions and how we try to tackle those. And then we had some interesting points raised by the organic movement, by Mr. Farrugia, and by the Bulgarian representative. So, who's next? Thank you. Can we have a... Thank you. All yours.
Our friends from Bulgaria, Peter Aksis at the Ali Producers Group, by the way, mentioned the problem of the paying agency, that they, you know, there to try and take your money back. I was on a conference in Brussels on producer organizations a year ago. And to confirm exactly what you said, we had the DG of the Commission, you know, DG of Agriculture, telling us what POs qualify for, how they are willing to help them and everything. They're all out to help them out. And when he was finished, I don't remember the names now, but I can get them for her if somebody challenges me. Then we had an intervention from the auditor, DG auditor. And he said, now what that man will give you, we are going to see how much we can get back out of that. And I said, is this the principle of, you know, of DU? What is the point of somebody going in for a plan, you know, a project, only to learn after 2, 3, 4 years that your money is going to be claimed back? Apparently, they tell you that it was unduly paid. What is the interpretation of unduly paid? You know, if I knowingly give you money, everything above board, 100% transparent, how can you suddenly say 4 years later that that money I gave you has to be returned? These are the problems I worry about. The director of agriculture, Mr. Zara, Dr. Justin Zara, made reference to democracy and not democracy. And rightly so. I think that organizations should be, you know, the people that run organizations in agriculture should be democratically elected, et cetera, et cetera. But I worry when we have two cases in point at the moment in Malta, going over to the European Union. For example, the way the commissioner was dismissed. It's nothing to do with agriculture, but this worries me that, you know, as agriculture, we're going to be indirectly involved in this. If the EU can suddenly say to you, you know, you either resign or I kick you out, or I dismiss you, without having a chance to know why, that to me worries me. If on the other hand, you get a commissioner that's been nominated by a member state, like we have done at the moment, this is ongoing at the moment, this problem, you have a commissioner that's been chosen by the member state. You get the president of the European Union accepting this nomination. But no, that's not enough. I say that you shouldn't even go as far that the president of the European Union, you know, the member state should have a right to elect or nominate who they like. Only then, if this person elected proves that he's not going by the rules or by the regulations, should he be dismissed or asked to resign. Yes, fine. But to have gone through all that process, And then suddenly this goes to the European Parliament, and then it goes to the councillors. And if they happen not to like the colour of his hair, all right, or because he has conservative, suddenly this guy is not accepted as a commissioner. And we call this democracy. Now, this worries me. These people who are preaching what democracy should be all about to us don't know what it means when it comes to themselves. That's the point I'd like to make. Thank you.
My microphone works. That's it. Okay, so can we have another intervention? Your name and organization. Thank you.
I think it's on. My name is Paulo Aguas. I'm from the Portuguese Farmers Confederation. And I have some questions for Dr. Zahara, just for curiosity for me, because I don't know the figures of the Maltese agriculture. And it's the weight. I don't have an idea about the weight of the agriculture and the agro industry for the Maltese economics, and if the government has some goals for these numbers. And also the percentage of the Maltese population involved in the sector. The second question was about when Mr. Dr. Zahara referred about the first pillar and second pillar. I didn't really understand what do you prefer, a stronger envelope on the first pillar or on the second pillar? Because I think for what I understand from your agriculture, this will be very important for you. How do you want it distributed, especially because the new CAP doesn't want to move money from one envelope to the other envelope. And I think in the initial negotiation, that will be very important. Just a very small comment on the words of our young farmer sitting over there. And I come from a country also of young farmers like him. And we had to do exactly what he said, a preferential treatment reaching young farmers. And with the investment, national investment and CAP investment from last program, I can tell you that only in 2012, and we are in October in this moment, we have about 2,000 new young farmers were installed. And these probably in between 2010 and 2011, 20,000 new jobs in agriculture. Of course, this has a price, this has consequences, especially capital costs. As you know, money actually, it's rare and expensive. And the problem is these young farmers and most of the farmers which are investing are not investing with their own money because they don't have the money and they're paying a lot for capital costs. This is the cost of doing the investment and to use the preferential treatment, because the preferential treatment never gives you 100% from what you need. About the fair prices, this requires organization. You must organize yourselves as farmers. You have to create direct chains. You have to create direct chains to the market. You cannot allow the middleman stay with the 3 euros, as you said. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I think that on your first question about the general makeup, I will of course send you more detailed statistics from the statistics office. We're talking about a sector which is quite atypical, because you have about 2,000 or less farmers who are farming more than 2 hectares, but you have 17,000 people who are carrying out some type of agriculture, or who hold land and say that they carry out agriculture. So you understand that the challenge to be able to achieve the policy goals is to really be able to segment who is doing what and who needs which type of support. Because I think that refocusing or focusing better the types of support that there is on people in the manner they need it, on farmers in the manner they need it, is the key challenge when you have as you were saying, a situation of scarce financial resources. And this also leads me to answering your question on this issue of Pillar 1 and Pillar 2. You said rightly that there is this debate about whether there can be shifting of funds. The debate is being carried out in the financial forum, in the multi-annual financial framework, by the ministers responsible for finance. One of the points that is being debated there is precisely in the logic of this drive to have a redistribution or realignment of the rates that are paid under Pillar 1, whether there is also the scope to have more flexibility for member states to be able to use some of their Pillar 2 allocations for income support. We are. That is what was proposed by the Commission, but the debate in the MFF is evolving, of course. We are saying, as a point of principle, but this is also, I could say, almost a general position that Maltese Agricultural has to take, that where there is more flexibility, more legal flexibility, there is a better chance that, together with the stakeholders and the Commission, we can then use those legal texts to design a support package that makes sense and is able to deliver the policy objectives that have been set. Where there is less flexibility, there is more difficulty in finding solutions. And as regards your point on young farmers, yes, I think you're completely right. The issue is really one of capital formation when you are setting up. They're taking out loans from banks. They're not using their own money, and they have quite a hefty commitment with the banks, a commitment which depends on, to a certain degree, external factors, especially the market returns and volatility of the market, because unfortunately the market for food has been characterized and will continue to be characterized over this decade by quite extreme price volatility. So really you have to find support instruments, I think, that are able to help them on this capital formation. But I also think that in specific contexts, you have to also look at where and how they can put that capital formation to bear. Because when you have certain excess costs, for example, in obtaining land, then that can also be a big stumbling block besides the financial stumbling blocks. And I think that unless you are able to find young farmers who have had the right training and who have the right business model in mind, and make sure that their overall access to these conditions is right for them to make a good living, then overcoming that challenge will be difficult.
Thank you, Dr. Zahra. Okay, I have a request by Mr. Farrugia. Will you allow me to ask a comment from the Estonians, because they haven't spoken yet? Okay. Can you kindly introduce yourself and say something?
Yes, sure. My name is Leho Verk. I'm from the Estonian Farmers Federation. And continuing from the, you know, first, second pillar discussion, and what was also mentioned earlier, that some of the Eastern Europe, and in our case we would like to think, there's snow today in Estonia, so we're actually in the north of Europe, but we are, you know, second to last in the first pillar payments, so it directly kind of is connected to our agriculture, the issue. But what I would like to come to is that we actually consider the second pillar much more... vital. We would very much like to see the leveling of Pillar 1 payments, but it doesn't have to be in the form of just raising the payments to those who get less. And I know that our Portuguese colleagues here are not very far from us. They're fifth from the from the back. So, but it's not like that. It's actually just leveling the playing field. That's what we're after. But for the agriculture itself in Estonia, the measures that we can design locally that take notice of the specifics of Estonian agriculture and can be targeted much more, you know, with more precision, those are all in the second pillar. So actually we value the second pillar very, very highly. And in under no circumstances would we like to see our first pillar payments raised on the cost of pillar two. So that's that position. I also wanted to mention that at least we don't have much of a couple of problems that were mentioned as well. Our education level of the farmers is clearly somewhat higher than Mr. Portelli mentioned here, that we probably won't see anyone spraying some poisonous stuff on their fields without proper gear, etc. And also the enforcement seems to be okay. I mean, they're checking what we're doing quite well. Want to add something from the Estonian side?
I think you covered it all.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting as well. Okay, so we're pressed for time, and we're soon going to move on to the next topic. But I will ask Mr. Farrugia to pass his comments and sum up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your microphone. I want to explain to our friend across the table that I act as secretary to an organization of farmers where we are the middlemen, and each member can have an audit trail of every single potato or pumpkin he brings in. So the member can see what he has brought in, what the price that was fetched for that product, whatever remained, and everything. So we are above board because we are the members. The members organize the thing. What hit us was that when we organized first time this producer organization, we were led to believe that this and this and this help would be coming if we do this and this and this, which we did. Then came the lightning. It struck, and the paying agency told us, A, you shouldn't have received a penny. Bo. Not even setting up costs. Bo. Now, that is what happened and is happening to us. Now, a question to Dr. Zahra, please. A few months ago, I was at a conference which you addressed, and you said that Malta is having problems in the EU because we are small and we cannot enforce our needs, which are special. Everyone agrees on that. And the Europe really caters for bigger nations. Now, I'm reading this while here, and I find that quite a number of ideas and wishes are listed here. Is this a wish list, or is it something that's going to happen and be accepted by the EU, so that Maltese farmer can at least look really at something concrete being done for them? You gave a very realistic picture of the farming in Malta, with fragmentation of the land. Perhaps someone will explain that and save me the time. Happening in Malta with the earnings of farmers being low respective of other their salaries, and knowing that in Malta we have the proverb that you create a heap of fire and put a euro there, but the Maltese will get it, even through the fire. However, if the since there is no euro at the end of the farming tunnel, the youths do not really want to participate. And this I know because I am in the farmer's gallery. In the last 24 years, I have turned into a farmer since I was turned pensioner. Thank you.
Thank you very much to our young farmer. We have a new... yeah, exactly. We have a new concept. Okay, Dr. Zara, have you promised me you're not longer than 4 minutes? Thank you.
To go over the points raised by Mr. Farrugia. On the first issue, where he mentioned the producer organization that he is secretary of, I think that this is a bilateral issue, a very complex issue which cannot truly be summed up in such a short space of time. And I don't think that this is the appropriate forum either, so I will skip this. As regards the comment that I made at the conference, you are saying, you will permit me to clarify that it is not, I did not make that comment in the way that you have understood. I was reacting to a more specific point made by someone in the audience, and I was only pointing out the fact that the negotiations are split into what is the central model of the CAP, which means the rules that are there for everyone, and then specific adjustments that are made towards the end as part of a political decision-making process, but which comes at the end. And my comment has to be understood in this manner. Of course, when you go to the European Parliament, when you go to Council, what you are discussing is the text that is put by the Commission in front of the Member States. And when you finally have an agreement on that text, the senior politicians, and in this case the Parliament, also then discuss some specific issues which are relevant to one or other member state. But I would not ever say that Malta cannot enforce its obligations because of that. Now, as regards to what you are talking about, the concept paper is the responsibility and was drawn up by the conference organizers, not by myself, so it is not government's position. I will simply refer you to the points that I made during my presentation. And as refers to your last point about youth, you may have an experience with some youth. I also have mine. I have had young people who have been graduating from the colleges which teach agriculture and who are desperate to make a career in agriculture. And I can tell you that they mentioned to me other obstacles besides the financial ones, structural obstacles. And this is why I think, and I am saying, that we have to make sure that we can present a good career for them in terms of finance, but we also have to make sure that we are tackling the right policy issues to make sure that the obstacles that they are facing are what we are helping them with.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zara. We are going to move on to the second team, which is very close to my heart. Small member states deserve preferential treatment. That sounds good, right? Okay, we have Mr. Francis Gaia from Cooperative Malta, who is going to address the floor. Thank you very much.
Good morning. It's okay. When we started on this experience way back in Sofia in June, we tried to explain the existing challenges of a small island state like Malta. An island just over 316 square kilometers and 80 kilometers distant from the mainland, an island so small, yet comparatively overpopulated, with 1,333 persons per square kilometer. An island with a scarcity of soil, scarcity of water, and scarcity of manpower, especially skilled youths in certain sectors of the economy, such as agriculture. Again, apart from the scarcity of water, Malta has short winters with around 500 millimeters of rain, a yearly average of 8 dry months, with over 3,000 hours of sunshine per year. Every year, agriculture in Malta requires as much as 28.5 million cubic meters of water. These statistics will surely put us first in climatic deficiencies among all the EU countries. Moreover, we welcome approximately 1.5 million tourists in Malta per year. All this leads us to understand the importance of fruit and vegetable production throughout the year, conservation of fertile soil, the necessity of water shortage to reduce water pollution above all. In order to have permanent green fields and reach the crop diversification expected by the EU, Malta deserves a better treatment. Our fields are surrounded by the characteristic and unique rubble walls, a system our grand-grandfathers toiled to build in order to retain the soil from being carried away. Furthermore, the size of our fields and the average amount of hectares cultivated by each farmer is almost irrelevant when compared with farmers in the remaining 26 EU member countries. So, the impression that you will hopefully be able to get during this visit in Malta is going to be something unimaginable, that is, far smaller than what in Europe is estimated as small. All this will lead you to approve our idea that a common agricultural policy is not beneficial for Malta and similar states. To survive, Malta deserves a special or a preferential treatment diverse from the set of common regulations laid down for other nations. To uplift these difficulties, we said it categorically that most of the funds must be channeled towards research, education, and training. As we have all experienced the results of direct subsidies, for the coming years up to 2020, we must be innovative, and a lot has been said already about innovation, and to be truly innovative, we must put this word in practice by modifying the funding system and make it more flexible. By directing most of the CAP funds towards these categories, we hope to make a step or two forward and improve both the skills and abilities of our farmers and herdsmen. We also hope to have a clear policy, guidelines and strategy for our agricultural sector, and above all, we make sure that this sector is sustainable. In this manner, the present farmers will work more willingly, knowing that they will make a decent income. Such results will give ample proof and example to stimulate young persons to continue their studies or research, enhance their skills, and join in the farming sector. According to the census held in 2010, we have 18,539 farmers, of which only 1,301 work full-time. This means that in 10 years, we lost 223 or 14.6% of the full-time farmers. This is something that has to be addressed, since full-time farmers are considered as a dying breed because part-time farmers rose by 37% in the past 10 years. On the other hand, we had a positive result, since the amount of cultivated arable land increased by 1,796 hectares to 11,453 hectares. We focus on the full-time farmers. If we focus, on the full-time farmers, we find that of the 1,301 full-time farmers, 88 farmers are less than 25 years old, 167 between 25 and 35, 234 between 35 and 44, 374 between 45 and 54, 341 between 55 and 64, and 97 over 65 years old. These statistics speak for themselves and obviously need to be pondered upon, since in the part-time farmers category, we find only 1,804, which are below the age of 34 years old. The small island of Malta has no resources. It has to import most of the products, especially foodstuffs. If we exclude the 372 hectares for fruit trees, 111 hectares for orange and lemons, 140 hectares for olive trees, 614 hectares for vineyards, and we are left with the remaining 9,078 hectares for various items, mainly arable land for crop rotation. Then 5,553 of these are used for animal fodder, 1,731 for vegetables, 701 hectares for potatoes and for flowers, seeds, and various other items. We cannot have a complete portrait of this local scene without mentioning the herdsmen. The last census shows that we have 15,600 cows, of which 6,740 are for milk production, and 70,000 plus pigs. These two small but important industries are organized in two separate cooperatives. The first one, the Milk Producers Cooperative Society Limited, was registered in June 1958. Exactly 54 years ago. Having for some years held together as a company, the then 1,200 milk producers realized that the cooperative's model was far more beneficial for them. Today, this cooperative, which can be classified as one of the best models for the cooperative's movement in Malta, is made up of 122 members, has its own feed mill, and owns 75% of the factory Malta Dairy Products, a factory that produces various types of milks, yogurts, creams, cheeselets, and ricotta. These members have strived to work together along the years, and more recently, when Malta joined the EU, struggled hard to restructure and remain competitive. Like the pig farm, likewise, the pig farms have their own cooperative for the production of pig meat and other byproducts. During the past few years, these two cooperatives could not make a lot of progress due to the increased prices of cereals. This September, all indicators showed that world food prices continued to rise, amongst them corn and soybean. Even the Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, warned about a 1.4% rise. We have other animal farms which cater, hens, rabbits, sheep, and goats, but none of these are established in a cooperative. Some may ask, how much is it valid to have a cooperative movement in Malta? To highlight the validity of such a movement, here are some statistics. Currently, the cooperatives movement is made up of 65 cooperatives that have a turnover of about 72.2 million euro every year. Presently, the cooperatives have over 4,900 members and employ around 260 workers who are not members. It is true that, like any other business, every now and then cooperatives fail to perform successfully, and at times they have to be liquidated. But the total of those that have to go for the process of liquidation are far less than those newly registered. On the other hand, it is officially known that when talking about companies, a third of those that are registered go for liquidation every year. If we take into account the performance of the cooperatives movement between 2008 and 2011, we find that 15 new cooperatives were registered while 12 were liquidated. Up till now, during 2012, the Board of Cooperatives registered for new cooperatives and had no liquidations. To enjoy a continuous success, a cooperative needs to have a dynamic, experienced, and motivated manager. A cooperative also has to be able to produce the service or produce by its members at a competitive price while keeping in mind the interest of its members and the society where it operates. Similar to other organizations or SMEs, a cooperative must make profits, be flexible, and ready to change when circumstances arise. So it is always an asset if we learn and introduce new methods of production with innovative methods of organization and management entwined with loyalty and commitment. All this leads us to express ourselves more clearly and reaffirm that small member states deserve preferential treatment. This is why we are saying special or preferential and not just common. This is also why we have previously in Bulgaria, in Portugal, and in Estonia mentioned the need that CAP should be more flexible. All member states have their particular advantages and disadvantages. We must show that collectively we can work hand in hand and are prepared to carry the weight. Malta has got a lot of disadvantages, for instance, its size, limitations, position, type of climate, and so on. Nevertheless, Malta can offer its facilities for research, development, training and awareness, knowledge creation, sharing and diffusion, exchange programs aimed at young farmers and study groups. This plan will not only help these four countries, that is Bulgaria, Estonia, Portugal, and Malta, but many other member states who believe and are expecting flexibility for transfers between Pillar 1 and Pillar 2, and so improve the distribution of direct payments. The year 2012 has been chosen by the United Nations as the International Year of Cooperatives. Together with Malta, there are 33 more European countries with 90 organizations, one of them Cooperative Malta, represented in Cooperatives Europe. In Europe alone, there are over 160,000 cooperative enterprises made up of 123 million members. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said this when he launched the year 2012 for as the cooperatives year. Cooperatives are better tuned to local needs and better positioned to serve as engines of local growth. By pooling resources, they improve access to information, finance, and technology. Their underlying values of self-help, equality, and solidarity offer a compass in challenging economic times. By contributing to human dignity and global solidarity, cooperatives truly do build a better world. As a final message to cooperative farmers, associations of farmers, farmers' unions, and all, let us all strive to build a better world by putting forward our collective innovative ideas for a truly common agricultural policy in favor of agriculture, food safety, the environment, and the farmer, so that mutually we secure a healthier future. Thank you. Or as we say in Maltese, grazie.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gallia. Very interesting presentation. Okay. We can see now that it's not only farmers, but herdsmen. In Malta, we have the terminology of full-time and part-time. I'd like to hear from our guests whether they talk about animal working hours exclusively, animal working hours, or they do differentiate between full-time and part-time. And I'd also like the floor to answer whether, in your respective countries, was enough done for the cooperative movement to turn into producer organizations without much hassle. And also, I'd like to hear about POs versus cooperatives, whether there is any animosity between these two organizations or cooperation. Okay, so who's going to take the floor? Ooh, absolute silence. I don't believe this. I thought I was going to... Come on.
Say something.
Oh, thank you very much.
On the last issue that Louis mentioned with regards to the... cooperative, sorry, Oliver Frendo. I work for the Pig Breeders Cooperative Society. I'm a veterinarian. I'm also their general manager. As a cooperative, we were interested in the, mostly to be honest, in the funds available for the setting up producers' organizations. We already had a well-founded cooperative. It's been founded for about 30 years. But we are looking into building new offices and new farms, so we thought that perhaps by being recognized as a producers' organization, we could open ourselves up to certain funds which seem to be being released purely for POs, and not for cooperatives, which we, of course, see as an organization of producers. It is indeed an organization of producers, and yet there seems to be this legal definition, PO or co-op. Unfortunately, in Malta, when we tried to make the move to being recognized as a PO, it was easy enough to be recognized, but we could find nobody who could clarify certain taxation issues. It seems that the laws in Malta with regards to the taxation of POs left us in a place where we didn't know whether we would continue to pay tax as a cooperative or whether we would start to pay tax as a private enterprise with 35% tax. So obviously we had to scrap that plan. And although we had already gone through the process of changing our statute in order to allow us to be recognized as a PO, with a question that large hanging over your head, you take a step back, cancel the plan, and move on with other things, which is what we had to do.
To go on, that was very poignant. That's interesting. Yeah, sure. Peter Aksisa.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Gallia made stressed a very important point, which I'd like to stress here again, and I'm sure the smaller countries like yourselves here would like to stress as well, is we are. Until the European Union recognizes the fact that the one-size-fits-all principle cannot be accepted if we are going to do anything about it. Our friend here from the big cooperative has just said about producer organizations. We did one of what was regarded as one of the most successful POs, but we are now also going to be turned into a cooperative for reasons we won't go into here. My opinion is that unless Europe, I was around the table in this hotel with Commissioner Ciolos a year ago, 2 years ago, I don't know. Louis was here as well. And we told him this business of one size fits all principle has to change. He admits it has to be changed. He's seen our peculiarities. He recognizes the fact that we've got problems because of this. Yet, you know, that's not good enough. What's the point of acknowledging that we have a problem and nobody can do anything about it? And that's why my earlier intervention worried me. Because whilst we talk about diversity and democracy and all this, you know, we are subject, we are a little state. And here I will also go on to a point for Dr. Zara. I was present at a music meeting once, MUSAC meeting, where you told us that being small in Malta, we have no weight when it comes to negotiating. I'm sorry, that is exactly what you said. Okay, all right. I say that's what you said. Thank you. The point is that this does exist. We are small, and we're not getting our voice heard. I'm sorry. Otherwise, you know, within 2, 3, 5, 7 years we've been there, something would have done about this. What's the point of everybody acknowledging that we have a problem? The industry is being held back. We've been set on roads that lead to nowhere, okay? And where's it all getting the industry? I don't know. Ask the farmers. Ask the growers.
Thank you, Mr. Exisa. For the sake of... Can you just stop?
I made my position clear. I deny completely that was what I said. I said what I said when I clarified the intervention earlier. If I believed that Malta was small and had no voice, I assure you, Mr. Axis, I would not be sitting here as a director of agriculture and going around and negotiating and talking about agriculture. Okay? I do things that I believe in. I would never have said that. I haven't been complaining about anything. I haven't been complaining about anything.
We have.
I know. May I answer? I know that you have been complaining about a number of bilateral issues, some of which you have just mentioned now. Yes. And I think that this is not the forum to tackle those.
No, I'm talking about our voice being heard in the UK.
Yes.
In the EU.
I think our voice is heard in the EU a lot more than the voice of a lot of other farmers and island administrations than anywhere else, because we go to a plethora of EU meetings and we constantly make our voice heard. And I think that the track record that we have in running schemes, in getting funds, in getting all sorts of adjustments speaks for itself. If you think that this is not our voice being heard, then that's your opinion. I beg to differ.
It's not a question of being heard. It's a question of being heeded.
Yeah. Can we just have Mr. Gallia's reaction to what's been said so far? Thank you very much.
I agree with the first comment about the need on the issue of cooperatives, since in Malta the cooperatives represent quite a good number of farmers. There may be associations and all that, but farmers in Malta can be members both in a union or association or cooperative. So more or less they are being covered by representatives, and the view is, it's clear, that number one is that most of the farmers are aged, and it's a big problem because it seems that not a lot of young people are interested in farming, since farming is not that much a trade which is attractive, you know, and all that. The second thing is the difficulties and the struggle that the farmer has with the elements. Apart from the sun or the storms, the two extremes that hit Malta, there's another thing. There's the scarcity, as has been said even by previous speakers, of water and soil. In my opinion, one of the best things that should be given to the Maltese farmer as aid is to have more storage for water. A lot of water is being lost in this island, especially when we have the storms in the beginning of the season, that is end of September. This year it was early September, but normally it's end of September, October. We get a thunderstorm with heavy rainfalls, maybe almost 80 millimeters of rain, and most of it goes into the sea. For example, I've got a huge cistern where to collect water, which is almost half as big as this hall and twice the height. And in the first, because I was careful, in the first storm, I managed to fill 5 feet of water, which is, I don't know, a friend of mine told me how many cubic meters it is, but it was enough to keep on watering my trees, which are olive trees, up till the date when I was almost going to harvest. That is from the beginning of September to the end almost of October, because the harvesting, I just finished it on the 21st of October. The real thing is here, we are losing so much things which are very precious, which is water. Water is the most precious thing, and that's why I said Malta needs preferential treatment. And on the other hand, to produce water, we need more money to produce it. So we'd rather invest and get aids to have storage where to preserve water, especially to farmers. And I believe that it will be the most gainful thing and the most mind-resting thing for the farmer, especially when he's trying to persuade younger farmers to take over his job. Thank you.
Thank you for that intervention, Mr. Gaglia. Okay, if you allow me, Mr. Portelli asks for the floor. But before I give the microphone, I'd like to hear some comments from Portuguese, Estonian, and Bulgarians, because there's a lot of cooperative movements there. We'd like to hear about your PO, producer organization situation there, and also about the full-time, part-time, and annual working hours. Thank you very much.
Thank you. About Francis' presentation, I always like to hear about figures, but comparing with our figures, and when I hear you complaining about the age of the farmers, and the figures say that full-time farmers under 44 years old, you have 47% of the farmers. I think that's great for the future, and I think you shouldn't complain. And all the young farmers are needed, like that one also. But this figure of 47%, it's great. For you to have an idea, we're expecting by negotiating with the Commission, we have 2% of the first pillar for Portugal, which is something like first pillar will be 600 million euros, 2% only for young farmers. And we are afraid not to reach the 12 million euros, which is a 2%, with the young farmers we have for the next 7 years, which means we know we don't have young people enough. The ones we were in Portugal, remember that Bernardo said if they allowed us to take young farmer and until 45 years old, we can get more. You remember that? That will be the only way. It's to reach. Well, if we get young farmers until 60 years old, we have the problem solved. But we cannot do it. Yes, yes, you can come over. Well, that's why I think about that, that that is not that bad. Another thing, it's you started saying, I had some notes, small and isolated. Well, about being small, it's a point of view. Well, we talk about not 27 countries, we're talking about hundreds of regions. That's Europe, it's regions. You can understand yourself not only as a country, but also as a region. And from that point of view, you're not small, you're big, okay? And Portugal, it's made of 7-8 regions. Probably that need all together. Like, I come from a region where we have 6 people for square kilometer. 6 people for a square kilometer. We have a problem of people. We have 1,000 something for square kilometer. Completely different problems with completely different solutions. But no, it's small, it's a point of view. And about being isolated. Isolated is impossible for farmers. Farmers are always together. We have the same problems, we share problems, we share ideas. Don't talk anymore about being small and isolated, okay? That's important. Well, about the proposal of the Commission, and I'm talking mainly about the document from October 2011, theoretically we'll have special support to risk farmers and more equality between countries, and it's supposed to be an issue. But when we go through the politics which are in the document, we don't find direct politics for these questions, which mean the risk farmers still in risk and probably don't have special support for their situation, and the equality between countries, especially on the first pillar, is completely different too, which mean we didn't reach yet. Well, there have been some changes with the Coppola's report, but he cannot. I don't think he can do more for the more peripheric, not isolated, more peripheric countries. He's been doing something. Well, but about the Portuguese situation, as you said, we are in a big recession, as you know. We're with the intervention of the International Fund and the European Community and all that. But in the last 5 years, including 2011, the agriculture and the agro-industry was the only sector in all the economy, all the Portuguese economy, that kept still growing. All the other economies went down, and farmers kept investing. As I told you, with the capital problems, paying a lot to banks, but we kept running. For 2013, we're achieving the end of the last funding from the CAP, we're expecting only for the projects which are already signed, 30,000 new jobs. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. 30,000 new jobs from those investments. It's probably the only sector which is still growing. That's why I think we should keep talking about this, sharing experiences, and that's the idea I think was behind all the organization that we can. And this is perfectly normal, the local situation. When we were in Portugal, you know what happened to the government guy that was there. Well, don't feel isolated too.
Much about something wrong with this. Anyway, we didn't hear much about the PO movement, and okay, great. Great. What will your take-up be of Pillar 2 funds? Pardon? What will your take-up of Pillar 2 funds be by end 2013? What will your take-up be out of the funds? No, how much funds will you manage to withdraw from Pillar 2? Are there any funds which you won't use? Will you send back to Brussels?
This year we expect not going any fund back.
Okay.
Last before, not very much either, because we were able to move money from...
Oh, good. From, yeah, precisely. Yes, okay.
They want to
Exactly.
Mine and probably yours.
Oh. But there is a sticky point about the regions, because Malta wasn't acknowledged as an island region, and we have problems. So comparing Malta to a region is a bit of a sticky point and a sore point. Can we have...
We don't send much money back either. and Estonians generally are quite, you know, in that sense, well... organized, that we try to use every tool that's been given to us. So in this sense, it's quite okay. We have an issue with cooperation. Estonian farmers, I think it's the issue that our Bulgarian colleagues probably understand. The cooperative movement, the whole reputation of cooperative movement was kind of tarnished during the Soviet times, so we're still trying to tackle this problem. If you tell someone you should make a cooperative, at least for an older generation, it's we don't want to do that, but actually they don't quite see what's behind that term, because the cooperation. Soviet style was a different thing, but it's not the case obviously anymore. But the heritage is still there, so we have an issue with the cooperation. Producer organizations, in the sense of federations, we have two. We have Farmers Federation, which I represent here, and we have. The Central Union of Estonian Farmers, which has as their members some very, very big agricultural enterprises. We represent the family farmers. And I'm sorry to say that most Estonian farmers, we have around 19,000, according to the paying agency. Most Estonian farmers don't belong to either of those two organizations. The young farmers issue, we have been quite successful with the Pillar 2 measures, investment measures tailored to attract young farmers. And we've used all those funds. I know there's... You know, this year's selection going on right now. There was Estonia is also a small country, not in the Maltese scale maybe, but 1.4 million people, and we had 233 new applicants for the Young Farmers Investment measures, which is pretty good. We had 4 million euros to spare. And they asked for 9, so not everyone is getting it, but it's pretty good. It shows that the young people still, the measure is working itself. Young people want to pick up farming or invest more, and it's not maybe as bad in that sense. But I don't know if it's not maybe a direct question, but if we're talking about wanting more flexibility and in connection with the problem with young farmers too, those are actually the measures that are in the second pillar. So in that sense, it's kind of difficult for me to see why would you want to put more money in pillar one, which is direct income, and transfer money from the second pillar, which is tailored to cater for your specific problems and the generation change, et cetera, and why would you want to transfer this to pure income support? But I don't know. It's just I don't know the specifics of Maltese agriculture that well, I guess. Do you now have something to add from Estonian side?
Actually, I do.
I'm Tiina Sergo, and I'm from Leader Local Action Group, East Tartu Partnership from Estonia. And I would like to add a little bit a broader view, not specifically about farmers, but in general, The presentation that Francisco Lea made was about the preferential treatment of small member states. And as Leho already mentioned, Estonia is also very small, so we feel all the problems you were telling, well, most of them. But I can't help but to think that aren't we putting a little bit too much time and energy and effort into demanding preferential treatment instead of using innovative solutions. In the first session, someone mentioned that we need to identify how to use the instruments we already have in a smarter way. Maybe we shouldn't concentrate on demanding more and more and say someone should do something, but we should do something ourselves, create innovative solutions, share experiences, things like this. As Francisco Lea said himself, that all countries, all areas have our advantages, have our disadvantages. Everyone has them. As you said, you have 8 dry months, so climate is the problem. In Estonia, we have 8 wet months, raining, snowing, so we also have a problem with this. And everyone has different problems. Germany probably says also that they have very specific problems. They need preferential treatment. Maybe we should look at it in another way. They are not small, but they say, okay, we need preferential treatment because we are so big. So everyone has their advantages, disadvantages, sorry. So that's my point.
Very interesting. Okay, can I have Bulgarian point of view? Thank you.
Thank you. I already comment on the topic of young farmers. I would only add that we had pretty successful measure on the rural development program for young farmers, and it's working well. Farmers are using the money to start business, and they also had preferentials for when they apply for financing under the other measures. So this is working in Bulgaria, and we would like to keep it for the next programming period so that we can continue encourage young farmers to get in the business. Because of the economic crisis, there are in certain regions in Bulgaria when there are good environment for farmers, people start to think really, oh, I have some land from my family and I can rent some more land, so maybe I can start growing vegetables, for example, or make organic production, because it's much easier to start with something small than to be a big grain producer, for example. As far as cooperatives and producer organizations, we discussed that in Estonia. It's a very difficult issue for Bulgaria, very difficult. Cooperatives are not very popular in Bulgaria because of the old socialist times when the word cooperative was not a positive one. So this makes a negative association in people's mind. On the other hand, producer organizations, they are not developing very well in Bulgaria. Somehow, Bulgarian farmers do not tend to organize themselves, to join together their efforts to reach some common goal. We really try to encourage them to explain why it's important for marketing reasons, for processing reasons, for better bargaining, to increase their power in the food chain. But somehow they finally say it's not in our mentality. I think we're talking about business, not about mentality, but it's really difficult. Still, we believe that in the next period, producer organizations should also have possibilities for financing and for support. Just to have the chance, at least for sectors like milk production, like fruit and vegetables especially, to finally have a few, at least, strong producer organizations which will really show that in certain sectors, in some certain businesses, it's much better to work together with your neighbor and not to be alone in the market. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we have Mr. Portelli and Mr. Farrugia. Anybody else wants to take the floor? Okay, Mr. Portelli, thank you very much.
Well, we've heard a lot about agriculture today, definitely, but we also heard a lot about money. And no matter what we say, at the end of the day, agriculture is the most important economic factor globally. Why? Because even if we produce millions of televisions, of computers and anything, we are never going to eat the bites we produce in them. So that's it. Whenever, even if we destroy all our land, at the end of the day, you're going to sit there. What are you going to do? Build the, you know, eat the material you build the flats with? So agriculture over the years, over these thousands of years, we've seen an evolution, a natural evolution, and sometimes not so natural evolution. Agriculture is also the biggest contributor to the changing landscape all over Europe. Forests have been cut down. We've seen that most of Malta has been surrounded with rubble walls, cultivated land. Today, unfortunately, land has become a more important economic item because of its value, more than than what it can produce economically. So we have to take care of agriculture, definitely, because it is what feeds the hungry people around the world. As regards to the age, yes, statistics today show that the average age in the agricultural sector is 50 plus. And in 20 years' time, that means the average age would be plus 20, which is very worrying. The good news is that the average age in organic agriculture is between 32 and 35. And although we have seen a big economic downturn all over Europe, all over the world, but investment in this sector has grown. It's the only thing that has really grown economically. So this sector has to face and put a brave face to the new realities. They are economic realities, environmental realities, demographic realities, and market forces. In Spain, for example, they have seen an exodus of young people leaving city centers. And these people are migrating to rural areas, going back to the roots. I think it is the same in Portugal. They have seen major migration from the rural areas. Environmental, well, we've said before, we have problem of soil erosion, we have a problem of water scarcity. Climate change, we know, for example, today the problems we have with certain insects that are accidentally being introduced onto our small island. We always thought that being an island is safe, but in reality, I can mention at least right now about 7 insects that have been accidentally introduced to the small island with economic consequence. The tuta absoluta, the red palm weevil, many more. The black weevil, the tuta. You know, so even being an island doesn't isolate us from the rest of the world today, environmentally as well. Also, I've been speaking to people that grow olives over here. In the same field, they had trees at different stages of production. Why? What's causing this fluctuation, environmental fluctuation, and fluctuation in the production? So we have to face the new realities. I've seen a statement of about 2 weeks ago of the cooperative at Almayal, where they said that costs have increased by, was it 35%, the cost increase in the production? Basically, fuel and animal feed. You know, which has overall increased the cost of production by about 70%, I think something like that. But at the same time, we've also seen a decline in the producers. In just the first 6 months of this year, 11 producers have picked up and left the market. True? Latest statistics, the last quarter analysis. And that's so. 11, you know? I don't just invent figures. But switching off the switch is a matter of seconds. But these are what I'm saying is this: we have to face the new realities. These are economic realities, environmental realities, and these aren't problems associated simply to a small island. These are problems. As a member of IFOM, International European Federation, over there we discuss these problems. And big countries, they have 8 months of winter. We have 8 months of summer. So we can't balance them out. There's nothing we can do to balance them out. We can't send you 4 months of our summer and you send us 4 months of our winter. Yeah. So we have to adapt. We have to learn. The biggest problem is getting people to adapt to new realities. People have to learn to adapt. That is the best thing you can do. You know, and we have to learn to do this. And the best thing is that we have to attract the new blood into this business. Otherwise, we're going to end up not being able to feed ourselves. Thank you.
We have an intervention from the what do you call it? First, Mr. Farrugia, and then we'll have.
In order to let you go away with a different idea of what I presented, now, instead of coming to scoff, I will do some praying. And I pray that the authorities keep a good eye on the milk producers cooperative. If this goes bankrupt, agriculture in Malta will go bankrupt. Why? Because in Malta we don't have any meadows for cows to graze on. We must feed them in their sheds. That's the only space they have, their sheds. We feed them the hay, which is produced by the farmers. And that hay, which they need to give fiber to the milk, occupies more than 50% of the land. Now, if they go, that 50% of the land will have to either be left fallow or go to produce other products, and we have a continuous glut of products, say aubergines or cabbages or what have you. Now, so we must keep a good hand and care on the farmers' co-op. It produces first-class products for us. First, they told us that it should produce milk with more butter in it or fat in it, which harms the body. But we had to obey the rules. Now, the only problem with the cow and pig industry is when they go to the toilet. They produce a lot of nitrates, and the nitrates is left to go down to the aquifer. In places where these animals are thick, it has gone 6 times as much as the norm. This could have been seen, because I personally have been crying against it for more years than I care to remember. Now, about 5 years ago, we were promised that we will form a sort of cesspit, which would be contained and waterproof, where all the manure will be treated so that it will not produce so much nitrogen. It will be then delivered to the farmers, and the cow industry would get even the money for that manure. We will produce energy through it, and also the nitrates will not seep to the aquifer because it will be reduced. We would have burnt it. However, this was never taken up. What we have taken up on water now is a huge tunnel costing 56 million euros. So that the water rushes faster to the sea instead of on our cars. Thank you.
Take you up on the milk cooperative. I agree with you that we should give them all the assistance necessary, but they should also stick to their responsibility and buy first local hay. Yeah, we have some problems there, though. Okay, so we only have a few minutes, and there's an intervention from the top table. So, Oliver, quick one. Thank you.
A few comments on a few things that have been said. Firstly, Mr. Galias mentioned that farming or isn't attractive. I have the honor of dealing with primary producers daily, and many of them, when they come to the office to speak to me or when I go to their farm, they have a child there, one of their children who would love nothing more than to remain working on the farm. It's not that the industry isn't attractive to people brought up in it. It is their way of life. It is what they would love to continue to do. When these people speak about putting on a shirt and tie and going to work in the office, it's like they're speaking about walking into hell. They don't want to stay on the farm because they don't have a short income from the farm. Their father tells them daily, you want to get married, you want to have children, you cannot stay on the farm. It's not that the industry isn't attractive, it's that it doesn't assure income. And when you work 16 hours a day, and one of the things in the industry is that pigs don't really respect our calendar so much, they don't really care if it's Christmas or New Year or your birthday, they want to be fed anyway. These guys don't even complain about that. That is a very, very distant second problem to the basic problem of, will I be in the plus or the minus at the end of the month? Can I buy shoes for my children? These are the concerns they have. Not that they're going to get dirty or they're going to smell like pigs. Another thing that was said, I didn't want to make it seem as if I was putting down what you were saying, the gist of what you were saying, that many are closing or that they're closing at an alarming rate. This is true. Just 6 years ago, we had about 150 or 160 active pig farms in Malta. And today that comes down to about 110. It's just that I don't believe that there are 11 closing down at this time or this year. As I said, closing down a pig farm is a process that can take years. From breeding a sow to slaughtering its offspring can take up to a year. So you can't flick the switch. There's living animals there. You've got to keep looking after them until the time comes where you can slaughter them humanely and then close down your farm. Another thing that's being said a lot is that we don't have enough of a voice in Europe. Now, I don't think that we should expect that when they're setting up a framework to fit the entire European Union, that the decision makers can keep Malta first and foremost in their mind. That's unreasonable. However, the term framework in itself suggests something rigid, at least an element of rigidity where one thing is fixed to the other, and therefore you can't break it apart as you wish and put it back together as you like. If Malta's specificities are such that it's very hard to achieve what we need to achieve, and the fact is we go round and round in circles, we know what our problems are, we know what our biggest challenges are. We have some rather reasonable suggestions and solutions for some of these challenges, and sometimes we find that the framework is more of an obstacle than a climbing frame, which we can quickly use to achieve our goals. It's an obstacle where we have to spend months trying to figure out how we can dig under it or go around it or somehow get over it. I think that the concept of having a common agricultural policy is good, but it still has to allow, and we hear more of this moving towards this new programming period, we hear more of this talk of being more flexible. I doubt whether this kind of the flexibility required is achievable, and that's a concern. When there's talk of supporting small farms, for example, in the European Union, we've had experts come from abroad who have heard that Maltese farms are small. And so they would agree, yes, they're small, but then when they come and see them, they're shocked, they're flabbergasted. They would imagine a small field being to the horizon, not a field the size of this room. And we've had experts who have been around the EU, and they know the difference between a big farm, which is where you can't see the end of it, and a small farm where you can kind of see the fence on the horizon. They come to Malta, see an old man stooped over picking tomatoes by hand in the field the size of this room, and they say, okay, until you see it, you cannot understand it. If the decision makers can't understand our issues, and let's be honest, they can't all afford to come over here and go on a tour, we have got to have enough flexibility where we, to some extent, can decide how best to utilize our funds to fix our own problems. If they are problems that are specific to us, then we can't expect people who don't suffer from the same problem to spend too much of their time trying to solve it. Leave that up to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I can see here a lot of similarities between the between the innovative measure your colleague was saying and your flexibility. We're going in the right direction. Okay, we have to close this session, and I ask Mr. Paul Biskopo to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. First of all, I agree with what my colleague was saying about the tie, because I come from a fishing industry and it's not so comfortable to wear the tie, so I can understand that. What I want to say is that I cannot speak technically about farming, because I come from another sector, as I said, but we have most common issues in the two sectors, and I hear a lot of problems from other sectors. But the basic things that we must concentrate, it's irrelevant now how big is our voice and in Europe or not, it's what we have. Every country should make a budget on its own and make its workings on its own. With the frame that we have. Yeah, sometimes I complain even about the government, how they go and handle things in European Union. They might spend some more time with the farmers, with the sectors in various regions, even in other sectors, because we hear lots of complaints where sometimes you have to hear the word from the horse's mouth, and it will be better even for them when they go to deal for us in European Union, and that will be something that they have to understand. Regarding the problem of Malta about water, yeah, we understand it's the most essential problem that we have. But besides that, we have another problem which I hear a lot from other countries, is the marketing. We come from sectors that we produce seasonal products. And it's not that you have produced shoes and you can leave them 3 months and then you sell them. In fisheries, we have a certain type of species that you can blast freeze them, and you can keep them for 6 months. But in the agriculture sector, it's a little bit different, because when you freeze your items, it will be a loss. You're losing from the price. But what I mean is that European Union now is concentrating on giving the financial aids to producer organizations. And the key factor for producer organization is that the sector should have, the farmers in this case, should have their producer organization of their own. Even when we go for pigs and because the surplus of your product, you can't, when you have the surplus and you go to factories that will process your products, they will give you what they want with a misery of prices. And this is the key for these two sectors, especially fisheries and agriculture, that we should have the producer organizations owned by the same sector, owned by the farmers, owned by the fishermen, owned by the producer, because it's a producer organization. Unless we will have, or the governments, or the EU, someone will help us to build up the system, it's useless that we will not even name the producer organizations, because at the end, it's our product. It's our product that must sustain us. I have a dream that one day these sectors won't need any financial aid from nowhere. But we have to understand that the WTO, the world politics, are constraining us to import things or food products from outside the European Union at a very different low level of sanitary, of freshness, which are competing with our products. So that is something that it's killing our industry as well. So we have to keep preserving for these things, and we have to look and educate our farmers that we should go for a producer organization owned by the same sector. Thank you.